to try to trip me up right there, aren't you? It's good to be together. Look forward to sharing a few things with you this morning. Our boys have turned our living room into a ball field. Seriously. Pillows or bases. Hit it over the curtain. It's a grand slam. No, right? No, but they're constantly, Brady and Dylan are constantly, where's Brady? There he is, yeah. He's in here today. He gets to hear me. I said I'm going to talk about you this morning. Are constantly playing some type of sport. Whether it's baseball, basketball, football, soccer, golf. I mean, they set up little cups and hit it through. It's like a putt-putt course in there, you know. I mean, they're playing some type of sport, always. And you know what comes with that? As you can imagine, your nice living room, nicely decorated by my wife, comes a basketball bouncing off the rim, off the backboard, crashing into one of Megan's beautiful vases right there by the fireplace, which has marble kind of around the fireplace. So you can imagine the vase and marble, how those two work together. A nice crashing sound. Or a baseball flying off the bat, soaring over the imaginary fence, going into the upper deck of the stadium, which is our bookshelf. And this happened yesterday, actually. They were playing. Actually, they're learning a little bit better. They have like these little snowballs that you can hum those things, and you can hit people hard, and they don't hurt at all. They're really fun. So they're kind of, at least they're going to that now instead of like a real ball. But they hit it, and Brady hit it over. I mean, it was in the upper decks, and it hits this beautiful portrait that we have of all four of us like this, and it just comes crashing down. It didn't break, luckily. But we all have broken something, haven't we? Even this morning, Ted was, we were working on getting things set up, and we had these little candles, and Ted dropped this and knocked it off, and it crashed and shattered everywhere, and we had to clean it up, clean up the mess. Good job, Ted. But we've all broken something. How many of you have broken something really expensive? Like, oh, what are some of the expensive things that we've broken? A car? Gee, oh yeah, I guess we do crash them. Yeah, that's true. True, I broke one of those before too. China, fine china that you get when you get married, right? And you hardly ever use it. But the one time you do, you crash it. Yeah, what you got, David? Ooh, broke a collarbone. That's expensive, right? Plates? Blinds. Did you play baseball in the house too? No. A computer, you spilled like a coffee or drink on the computer and it just fries it. iPhones, yeah, drop them, crack them, right? Even you get the mega cases that you still, the one time you don't. Actually, we bought Brady like an iPod type thing, and we had the case, the hard covering that you're supposed to put on it. Well, we accidentally put it on Dylan's. And didn't get Brady's in time. So then, anyway, Brady took it, dropped it, and a nice crack right up the top. Yep. Yep. You broke the stove? Broke the oven? Did you burn something down? Man, I'm sorry. So, what do we tend to do, though, when we break stuff? Cry, all right. So, you hide it, right? Just kind of like, oh, forget that. You try to maybe super glue it, fix it, don't touch it, don't look at it wrong, right? It could fall over. Don't let the wind blow. Sometimes you throw it away. Blame someone. Yeah, they did it. It wasn't me, That's good. You ignore it. You kind of, like if you're ever in the grocery store and you like knock something over, like a glass of pickles maybe, where is she? Where's Pickles? Noelle. She broke some pickles on our cabin retreat, and I love pickles, and I was so excited, and she was carrying them in the first night and drops the whole pickles right there on the, so I call her Pickles. That's her nickname. She goes, I don't think you ever call me by my actual name. I said, I do know your name is Noelle, but I do call you Pickles. But you just drop, and it breaks, and you just leave, and you go, there's no one down the aisle, and you just leave it right there. Clean up on aisle six, clean up on aisle six. Maybe you buy a new one, you know, it breaks, you gotta, it's like, I can't live with, I gotta find, buy a new one if you can't fix it. But when something breaks, our tendency is what? To go straight to the negative, right? Go straight to the negative. You broke it, oh no, life is over. We don't just, oh, you know, I try, oh, it's okay, but no, I just go there, right? You just go to the negative, knowing that it's gonna be all right, really, but we normally don't see the good that comes when something gets broken. Very rarely do we see the positive when something's broken. This morning I want us to talk about there being beauty in brokenness. Because we're broken people, aren't we? We're broken. We're messed up. A couple of weeks ago, the week before Easter, David did a sermon, did a message, and we all had a card that was laid out on our chairs, and we had an opportunity to fill out these cards of just things that are troubling our souls. And we brought them, and I thought it was so powerful just to see people bringing in their, and basically we were bringing our brokenness to Jesus. And everyone just that time, it just kind of was just a natural flow. People just started getting up and bringing them and putting them in the baskets at the front. This week I came in and I asked Kay where these cards were, and I took them and I went through every one, and then I took some time just to pray over them. Because we're broken. We're broken. We're hurt. There's disappointments. There's failures. There's scars. There's worries. And our tendency is that we want to cover up and not let people see our brokenness. We try to put up a facade that everything is okay. We don't like to let people see us, who we really are. Cracks and all. Why is that? It's because vulnerability is scary. It's a scary thing to be vulnerable, to let someone in your life and say, this is me. That concept of surrender to God and say, look, this is who I am. Cracks and all. We don't like to be vulnerable. We like to protect ourselves. That's just our natural instinct. Should I really let them know what's going on? If I do let them know what's going on, what are they going to think? How are they going to respond? How are they going to treat me? Will they remember it forever? Will they ever let it go? We play those types of tapes over and over, don't we? It's a struggle to be open. It's a struggle for me personally to be vulnerable. I think just in my nature, I don't like to let people know what's going on. I think it magnifies itself by being in full-time ministry. There's pressures that I put on myself of, ooh, I can't struggle with that. I'm better than that. I should be beyond that by now. I've been a Christian 20-odd years. I should be more mature. I shouldn't have to struggle with that anymore. To look good, to look perfect. I've had people ask me before, Josh, do you ever struggle? Nah, I don't struggle at all. No. Of course I do. But what does that tell? What does that tell me? It tells me that I'm not open. And I'm not saying you got to be open to every single person. But I think you need to find someone, a couple of people, obviously to God, that we can be vulnerable and you can be open and you can be real with. As I put my card and filled it out that Sunday, I brought it up and I folded it. This is my card right here. I folded it. And later as I was working on this, I thought about that. Why did I fold it? I didn't want someone to see it. Somebody coming up right after me. There's Josh Holt's card. Boop, right there. Ooh, what's he struggle with? So I thought, what better way to get over that and to show you my brokenness than to read my card? You know, I worry. The first thing I put on there is I worry about finances. We are going through a process recently where we were looking to possibly buy a new house. We found this house that we thought, this is it. It's perfect. This is kind of what we need, what we want. Went through the process, started getting things going. As I really looked at things, I said, you know what? We're not ready financially to make that move. Even, yeah, if we can make some money on the house that we currently have, be there, we just have too much debt. I'm just going to be honest. To feel like it's, because you know what happens, you get a new house, there's new things that come with it, right? And I don't want to put ourselves in deeper in a hole. So we had to have a talk and say, hon, as much as I would love for us to have that house or to go for it, I think the best thing for us to do is let's just to stay put. We love our location. We love the schools that our boys are in for now. Yes, they are playing baseball in our living room. And we're a few more years. Let's buckle down. Let's make a plan. Let's talk about it. Let's get help, whatever we need to do. Finances, worry of my finances, my health. Recently, about the last year and 3 months, I've had this kind of a pain that will not go away. It's a chronic pain. I thought it was just a pulled groin muscle, but it wouldn't go away. I have a chair here just in case I get too much pain, I'll sit down. When I sing on Sundays, I come in, if you're ever here early, I sit down most of the time during the practice because it hurts really, really bad, and I couldn't figure it out. Well, it finally got to a point where it just magnified itself about 3 weeks ago. I couldn't bend over. And I couldn't touch my feet. I couldn't wash my feet. I couldn't put on shoes. So finally had to go to the ER, go through a lot of different tests. There's just a lot of worry. Kind of at this time was just right around then. So there's just a lot of pain that was going on physically, and I just didn't know what was going on. I know there's so much more that you guys are going through. I don't want to compare that, but just personally, that's where I was. And I just felt worried about it. Megan's going through some different doctors right now. There's just some health issues we're both trying to figure out. And I just wanted to try to, I just worry about it, and I wanted to give that to God. The next thing I wrote down is my anger, my temper. And that really comes out, it came out when I was a young child in sports. My competitiveness, my parents would threaten me every game almost. If you don't change your attitude, I'm going to put you on the bench myself, or you're not even going to get to play. It's one of those things that was there. But then as I kind of got a little bit older, I was fine. But then once I had kids, my temper and my anger, I felt like I was just on a short fuse all the time with them. And that's not the kind of dad that I want to be. Obviously, I want my kids to love and respect me and others and be great additions to society and that sort of thing. And I want them to have good character. So obviously, I'm not saying I'm not wanting to discipline them at all. Yes, I do. But I had to really look at my temper and my anger, and am I doing something to scare them, to be bigger than them, to kind of come over them and for them to shrink back? I find myself going there. If you ever come see my boys play sports, some of you have come to do that. I'm a coach, and Coach Josh comes out, and Chuck saw it the other day. He goes, "Was that Josh?" I was telling the 5-year-old, "Listen to me, listen to me." 5 years old. He got to listen, right? You know, it's an important game of T-ball here. We got to win this thing. But you know, I mean, that's just me. I'm just being real. I mean, I get so caught up, and I know it's dumb and silly and I shouldn't, but I do. That's just who I am. So my anger, my temper. Lust. I thought as I would get older, it would get easier. And it doesn't. My mind still wants to go places. I still have this desire. I want to. It's getting summertime, right? Spring break is actually this week. People are going places. You know, it's a struggle for me, guys, to focus my eyes, to not let them wander. Those are the things that that I struggle with. Those are things that I don't like to talk about. You know, I like to look good. I don't want to look broken because I want to impress. But I have to realize, I think we all need to realize, there is beauty in our brokenness. Turn to Luke 7. Last week, I talked a little bit more about that than I thought I would. So, Luke 7. Last week, David, this was Easter Sunday, talked about Jesus having a meal, sitting at the table with Zacchaeus, a chief tax collector, a sinner of all sinners. Sorry, I'll move this out of the way so y'all don't see this microphone the whole time. Hey, buddy. You want to come up here and sit with me? No, I don't think so. But he went and had a meal. He shared a meal with Zacchaeus, a sinner of all sinners, someone that was broken. And he welcomed, and they were together at a table, and they were welcoming each other and sharing a meal together. We also, as broken people, are welcome to his table. And I love that last week, how we went around and just around the table. Come as you are. It was such a moving time for me. Hopefully for you as well, just to know that we can come to him broken. Have you ever heard this saying, church is not a museum for saints, but a hospital for sinners? And that quote reminds me of a passage earlier in Luke 5. We don't turn there, but in Luke 5, Jesus also, he calls another tax collector by the name of Levi to follow him. And Jesus ends up going to a banquet at Levi's house, and they shared a meal together. And other tax collectors and sinners were there at Levi's house. And Jesus was there, a part of that group, a part of the broken. And the Pharisees, the religious, they got upset. They started complaining about Jesus eating with the sinners. And I love Jesus' response in Luke 5. It says, "It's not the healthy that need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repent." There's a church in Anderson, South Carolina called New Spring, and they had kind of a theme going one year, a few years back. I went to a conference up there, and they had t-shirts made, and it said, "No perfect people allowed." And I love that. You know, we're messed up. We're broken. We're not perfect. If you think you're perfect, you don't need to be here, because you're going to be disappointed in us. Church is not a museum for saints. It's a hospital for sinners. I love that. We all have our issues. I want to pick up here a couple chapters later in Luke 7. One of the Pharisees, he doesn't want to be outdone by the tax collectors. Hey, these tax collectors are having Jesus over. These sinners, well, I need to step up my hospitality. I want to have Jesus come over to my house. So Pharisee invites Jesus over for dinner. Let's read here in Luke chapter 7, beginning in verse 36. "Now one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with them. So he went to the Pharisee's house, and he reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them." We'll stop there for a second. So they're reclining at a table, chilling at the Pharisee's house, ready to share a meal together. Then all of a sudden, they have an unexpected guest shows up. And it wasn't one of the Pharisees' next-door neighbors. It wasn't a relative of this Pharisee. It was someone that he had no idea who it was, but he did kind of recognize her in the sense of, she's a sinful woman. This woman was a prostitute. And at that time, women in general weren't allowed to come to the table, especially women that were sinful to come to. That was unheard of. But she kind of pushes through that cultural norm, and she comes to the table anyway. She stands right behind Jesus, and she's just weeping. And as she's crying, as she's weeping, she begins to wet Jesus' feet with her tears. She wipes his feet with her hair. She begins to kiss his feet. Feet in general are kind of gross to me, right? Thinking about kissing someone's feet, even if you just took a shower and washed them really good, I don't want to kiss your feet. Especially, I mean, there were sandals back in the day, the dust and mud and dirt. And I mean, I don't know how well manicured, if he'd been to a mani-pedi lately. Probably not. His feet were probably nasty, but she did not stop kissing his feet, guys. Then she pours this valuable perfume on him. This lady, she was broken. I love this, though. Have you ever thought about for a second? Jesus didn't stop her, did he? He didn't stop her from doing that act. He allowed her to finish that process, which I think is so crazy and so cool to me, because so many times he could have easily said, okay, get up. That's enough. You've proven your point. He allowed her, in her brokenness, to continue that process. Why did he do that? Because he knows there's power and there's beauty in someone being broken. He didn't stop her. He allowed her to continue on. Have you ever had a time in your life where you were trying to be vulnerable with someone? Maybe someone was trying to be vulnerable with you, and you kind of stop them mid-sentence, stop them mid-story, and say, that's enough. I get the point. It's okay. You try to make them feel better about themselves. It's not that bad. We're stopping that person from just spilling their heart and their brokenness. Allow them to be broken. God wants us to come to Him broken. You know, we as a church family should champion vulnerability and see that it's okay to be broken. No perfect people allowed here. It's good for us. I think it's something that we need to do more of. I mean, it was great having this 1 week right before Easter, kind of a special moment to write down our brokenness. But I think it shouldn't be mandated from us. It's something that we should do. Just our heart should just pour out to people. See and acknowledge, because of our brokenness, we need Jesus. We need Him. Verse 39. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. So now we get the Pharisee and kind of get to dig a little bit into his mind and see a little bit of his heart. What this Pharisee doesn't realize and doesn't see about himself is that he's also broken. He doesn't think that he's broken. From what I gather, he thinks that he's much better. He's got it all together. That's scary. It's a scary place to be. If we don't see our brokenness, acknowledge our brokenness. You know, he says to himself, he doesn't say it out loud, doesn't want anyone to hear or know exactly what he's thinking, he wants to kind of keep it under wraps, hide it a little bit. First, he has kind of negative thoughts about Jesus, doesn't he? If he were a prophet, he would know who that is. That's scary. He starts looking down on the woman. If he knew what kind of woman that she is a sinner, he wouldn't allow her to touch him. Or he wouldn't touch her. You know, how easy is it for us to be like that Pharisee? It's so easy. Try to hide our brokenness. Try to hide it from others. Hide it from Jesus. We end up not talking about it, not bringing it to him. It's a scary place if you don't see your brokenness. Verse 40. Jesus answers him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." Oh boy. You just imagine, he's like, "Did I say that out loud?" You ever been there and you've done that before? You have this thought, and then you're like, "Did I just say that? Or am I just thinking that?" You know? Well, obviously, Jesus, he knows his thoughts, he knows our hearts. "Let me tell you something here, Simon. Busted. Tell me, teacher." I don't know how he said it, you know, but it's kind of like, did he try to put up the front? "Tell me, teacher. Yes, yes, tell me something." I don't know. But I just think that's kind of interesting. He just kind of like, boom, just rocks his world here. "Two men owe money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had canceled the bigger debt canceled." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this that even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." I love that, where she had acknowledged her brokenness, and Jesus saw that, and he recognized that as he was telling this story. She had been forgiven much, so she loved much. God's forgiven little, loves little. It's like, "Look, you invited me over, that's great. But since the time that I've been in your house, you didn't do this, didn't do that, didn't do this. But this woman comes in and does nothing but pour out her heart, pour out her brokenness." And what's Jesus do? He forgives. In verse 47, he forgives her of her sins. I mean, that's a powerful example of someone coming to Jesus in their brokenness and being healed, put back together spiritually. You know, and really, it's in brokenness when God shows up. It's in our brokenness when God shows up. Go and read Psalm 51. It's one that you're probably very familiar with, but read it in this mindset of brokenness. Talk about being broken. David was broken. You know, the Psalm 51 was written right after he had committed adultery with Bathsheba. Seemed beyond repair. But it's amazing reading that and knowing that and seeing what happens later in David's life, that God had other plans to use him in his brokenness, for him to see beauty in that brokenness. Many times we can feel like David, that our lives are beyond repair. It's going to take too much. Take too much work to try to fix what's broken in my life. We have broken families. We have broken marriages in here. Some of our relationships are just cracked to pieces. No perfect people allowed in this church, so it means this church is broken. There's going to be mistakes. Some of your dreams have crashed down. You've forgotten about them. Our lives are in shambles. Have you ever felt that way? In one of these areas? Just broken, shattered, set up on a shelf, tried to, tucked away somewhere, tossed aside, thrown away. In Japan, they make an art out of restoring broken things. And if you got the e-bulletin this week, you saw this picture. Kintsuchi. I don't know exactly how, if I said that right or not, but just say bless you and we'll move on, right? Kintsuchi! No, I don't know. Is a Japanese art of repairing pottery. And that word means to repair it with gold. Obviously, you can see it's broken. It's been shattered. It's been cracked. But it's been repaired and sealed and made new by being repaired by gold. So not only does it get fixed, but what does the gold do? It increases its value. You know, and really at the heart of this type of art, it's about turning what is broken. I mean, how beautiful. That's just cool. It's beautiful, isn't it? Instead of hiding the cracks, instead of hiding the flaws, it highlights them. You see them. It's visible. It's out there. It's highlighted in the gold. Here's the breaks right here. With the most valuable of minerals. The pottery becomes more beautiful and more valuable. Comes better than the original, right? Isn't that awesome? It's better than the original. It's worth more. Because it's been broken, and it's been restored, it has a new story to tell. Our lives, because of our brokenness, we have a new story to tell. I have a scar going up the right side of my leg where I was 12 and I ran into a barbed wire fence playing volleyball. Don't ask me why there was a volleyball net near a barbed wire fence. I grew up in the country. That's just what happens. But this is a story. I have this scar that's right here going up my leg, and I used to tell people it's a worm because it looks like a worm that's just kind of working itself out because it was really deep and it thinned out and my scar got thinner as I got to the top. It's just a cool story. It's a story that I have to tell, right? Whenever I wear shorts, you know, I try to wear long enough shorts, but sometimes, you know, the styles change a little bit and they go a little bit shorter. But I promised I wouldn't get chubbies, and I'm not getting chubbies. Any of y'all college kids that wear chubbies, sorry, I'm not doing that. Chubbies are like really booty shorts for guys. No, thank you. But the true life of the bowl began, listen to this, the moment that it was dropped. The true life of that bowl began the moment it was dropped. That story came to life as it was put back together and made new, made better than the original. It happened because it got dropped. It was broken. Satan, he feeds us lies that because of our brokenness, because of our mistakes, that we're useless. You're beyond repair, buddy. There's no hope for you. That's what he says to us. That's the lies that he feeds us. Yet God feels the complete opposite about you. He sees you in a completely different way. You're never broken beyond repair, never too broken for restoration, never too shattered for healing. Don't be ashamed of your scars. Don't be ashamed of your cracks. You have a story to tell. Your brokenness has the power to bring forth new beauty, strength, and inspiration to others. We know that. You hear people all the time talk about things in their life and they're pouring out their souls and you just are drawn to them. You admire them for their bravery, for their humility, for their brokenness. That's what people need from us. We have a life. We have a story to tell. God wants us to share it. I love this quote from a lady by the name of Heidi St. John. Being broken means I'm in need of constant repair. So I find myself at the feet of the one who heals. There's strength there. You know, we have a healer, don't we? The one who will repair and restore our souls. Because of Jesus, we can come to Him in our brokenness, and He'll make us stronger. He'll make us more beautiful. He'll make us more valuable than ever before. We're about to take communion together, and I want us just to thank God for that. Thank God for Him being our healer, for making us more beautiful, making us stronger because of our mistakes. My prayer is for you this morning that each of us, that we will see there is beauty in your brokenness. There's beauty in your brokenness. As we take communion, there will be a song that's going to be played, and it's called Broken Vessels. I think it fits perfectly with our theme of what we're talking about this morning. We have the communion up here again this week, kind of set up traditionally, kind of the way that we take communion. And the ushers will dismiss, I think, by section, and they'll kind of give you the clue of when to go. But just, we're going to have some time to take communion together, reflect on things, reflect on just what our life is, that we are broken, but there's beauty in that. Listen to the song. If there's someone that's by you that cannot get up and come take communion, feel free if you take communion back to them. If not, if someone forgets, just raise your hand again and we've got, I think, a tray in the back that we can make sure to get that. So if you don't feel comfortable coming up and can't come up, that's okay. We can make sure to serve it to you at your seat. Let's go to God in prayer.